Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to another edition of DPH Clinical. I'm joined by the guys from Colorado Surgical Institute, Dr. Dan Brisky and Dr. Tahir Dune. Dan, I felt like I had to say your name first this time. I always say Tahir first. We don't want to leave Brisky out because he's pretty special. Right, Brisky?
Yeah, let's go alphabetical order here.
Yeah, we should. That's the fair way to do it. Brisky's on a guy's weekend right now, and he's at
Telluride.
Yeah, he's in Telluride. So what are you doing out there, Brisky? You out there by yourself, just sitting in the snow?
Yeah, just reflecting on my life and see what moves we're going to make in 2024. No, we're just doing a guy's weekend. We're skiing for like a Thursday through Sunday type of thing.
Nice.
I am a little nervous about missing the Lions game. So Lions play playoff game at 1 p.m. on Sunday. So I'm a big Lions fan. And we haven't won in 30 years. So it's been a very long time. So I got to make sure I leave on time and I find somewhere to watch the game on Sunday.
Wow. Yeah, that's awesome.
Are you still a Lions fan as your number one? Or is it just like, hey, it's nice to see them do well because you're from there?
No, I have always been a fan of the Lions. And I've never been a bandwagon fan of anyone else. So tried and true. Hopefully we get a big win here.
Dude, I love those blue, like metallic helmets. I think those things are so cool.
They look good. I was glad to see they're actually playing good.
Right.
It's been a long time.
So what are we talking about today, guys? What do you guys want to talk about?
I mean, we left last time with like the consult room type of stuff. So we can talk about, we addressed insurances and medical and all that stuff and just warranties and guarantees and the fact that you can't really warranty biology. It's just, that's not how the world works. It's like not like the auto shop. So if we pivot into like, how do we explain the procedure in a way that the patient understands it so we don't scare them, but so we still educate, I think that could add some value in terms of what people want to hear so they can increase their case acceptance.
Yeah, I think that's great. I'll add that I'm just going to say what I used to say when somebody asked me what an implant was. I used to say, we're putting a screw into your bone just like we would put a screw into a piece of wood. I don't say that anymore, but I'm just curious to see how you guys would explain that. I've learned that doesn't work. That's not a good way to explain it.
Their visual might go sideways.
Yeah.
So if the patient's asking like what an implant is, what I'll essentially say is like, hey, this is just a replacement for a natural tooth. And we've been doing this for over 30 years. And the good news is, we got talked from some consultants to say, the good news is it's easier, it's faster than it's ever been before. I can actually place an implant for you faster than I could do a filling in a tooth. And that's just how technology has made this whole thing just easier than ever before. And let's say we were going to place an implant for you today. They give me a look. I'm like, well, of course, we're not going to do it today just for like time purposes. We would get you numb or we could sedate you and we would place the implant. And I think it would take me longer to get you sedated and comfortable than it would to be placing one single implant. And if we look at success rates, and I say in this practice, what the success rates are, is it's going to be about 95% success on placing an implant. So if you went and saw your orthopedic surgeon and you had to get like a hip or knee done, well, that orthopedic surgeon would tell you that 50% of these fail in 10 years. And what I'm going to be able to tell you is I'm going to tell you 95% of these are successful in 10 years. And so that's just how much easier the body is willing to accept an implant into the mouth versus an implant into a hip or knee. Because I try to bring them back to the whole fact of like, hey, this happens in the whole body everywhere, and we're just way better at it than the other specialties. And so that's how I'll give them the overall general bird's eye view of what an implant is.
Well, it's true. Like, and people don't, they hold us to a different standard for some reason because it's in their mouth. They do treat it like it's getting a car fixed. This stuff's supposed to work forever. What the heck is this? It's like no longer a biologic tissue. It's like, it's a commodity. It's a piece of machine that we're supposed to be able to fix. And I think that's good to like bring them back to like reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's weird. They don't question medicine as much. But what I've found is also if you start sedating patients, they start to like question things less also. So it's more of a, they'll make time in their life to come in and prepay for the appointment, but then not miss their appointment. And so it's just interesting to see versus my root canals and crown and bridge schedule, how my surgical schedule never falls apart. And then a crown and bridge appointment could fall apart pretty easily. But yeah, so that's how I'll explain that. Or if they say, hey, what's bone grafting? Well, I tell them, hey, if I was to pull a tooth, just imagine it's like a pothole in the road, right? You just have this hole where the root was. it's logical to think that the bone graft may hurt more or it's complex, but actually you feel less pain afterwards because we're going to be filling up the pothole and then we're going to be using your own growth factors over the top. And we put a couple stitches in. And then I also try to remind them like, hey, because in their head, they're like, well, cadaver bone, super freaking gross. I got a dead human in my body now type of like scenario. So I'll tell them a version of
in your mouth.
Yes. I mean, if you think of it like optically like that, yeah, it's kind of gross. But what I'll tell them is like, hey, on the day I place the bone graft, 100% of that material is bone graft material. And if I were to take a sample of that in 2 years, 50% of that would be you and 50% would be bone graft material. If I took a sample of that in 10 years, it'd be almost 100% you. So what the body does is it takes that bone graft material and you'll actually slowly turn it into you. You dissolve it and rebuild it as your own. So just know that this is just a scaffold for your body to rebuild. And the human body is super amazing in that way. And most people are like, oh, that's really kind of cool. Okay, great. That's awesome that it's not just bone graft in my mouth forever type of like scenario. So that's kind of how I'll generally kind of explain what a bone graft is for the patient.
What if they just said, so you're just screwing these teeth in? What are you doing?
So I'll say a version of like, yeah, you know, the implants are cylindrical. So your tooth is going to, and I'll use my hands and kind of make like an ovoid shape. So I'll say your tooth is like an ovoid shape. And then the implants are a cylindrical shape so they can rotate in. But the interesting thing is when we place the implants, most people aren't even really aware that we're placing them. It's such minimal amount of pressure. But the way the body works is it takes that pressure. And if you bite into the implant, it'll vibrate in the bone. And it'll take that bone from being like styrofoam or sometimes like balsa wood, like that pine wood derby material. And over time, it'll turn it into more of like a cedar wood type of material. And your body will accept it 95% of the time. I address it and I kind of describe it, but then I go into a different part of the information that's a little bit more interesting for the patient. So I pseudo address their concern about having a screw placed into their jaw. But most people, like, implants are more commonplace now where they understand that that's kind of conceptually what's happening.
So I feel like I say the same thing, but then like when I do the procedure, now I'm not doing big procedures like you, I'm just placing one or two. I have found that I don't like screwing it in with the handpiece anymore. And I really like the straight driver, though I know that is probably not the best patient experience thing for the patient because I am literally taking a screwdriver and screwing a screw into their head. But I just like how that feels. I don't know why. I just tried it one day and I'm like, I love this. I feel like I can keep it straight. I keep going exactly the angle I want. Any thoughts or criticisms?
No criticisms at all. Like when I place pterygoids and I use that straight hand piece one, I like the tactile sensation. I like the control I have. And yeah, I've never equated it to like I'm holding a screwdriver, but now that you've said that, that's what I'm going to be thinking about. And I feel like maybe that's why I'm comfortable there because like we've all worked with our hands. We've all done stuff around the house. But yeah, I definitely like placing them with the straight too.
Yeah. When I get the ratchet driver out, I go, okay, this is the part where you get to feel like a car. It's like,
yeah, most guys are going to laugh because like when you go on that back turn, it goes click, 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 click. You know, they're like, oh, you're torquing this thing in. And I'm like, yeah, man, but it's not pounds per square inch or pounds of pressure. It's just Newton centimeters. It's like really baby, baby stuff. But they usually will get like a little chuckle out of it when you get on that backswing.
That's great. How about you, Brisky? Like, what is your explanation for somebody asking you, like, what is this procedure? What are you doing to me?
For these bigger procedures, I try to use really layman's terms, right? A patient has like a denture or a fixed arch. I don't say fixed, I just say permanent teeth. So I say we have permanent teeth and we also have snapping teeth. So I just say really broad general terms so patients can really understand them. And I always have models with me. So every time I go into a room, I always have a model of a denture. I have snapping teeth. I have permanent teeth. Right. And I bring all of those models into a room and then I go through all of them one by one. But then I'll also explain it in terms of chewing and smiling. So whichever one's really important to them. And I show them a denture and I show them, hey, like this covers your palate, right? When it covers the roof of your mouth, that's where your taste buds are. So a denture typically will get you to about 20% of your normal function. So if you had all 28 teeth, you'd have 100%. So denture gets you to 20. Then I tell them with implants, if you have snapping teeth, just placing two implants on the bottom, there will be a little teeter-totter. And I show them where the teeter-totter would be. And I tell them that will help a little bit with security. But if you really want to be chewing, then you want four. And I show them where the four implants go and how the motion side to side and back and forth will now be stable. And snapping teeth will get them to about 60 to 70% of function in terms of eating all the foods you want to eat. Then I tell them the permanent teeth, this will get you back to 90% because this one doesn't come out. It's permanent. It's screwed in and you can eat pretty much anything you want. And I tell them the only 10% difference is once you take teeth out, you don't have the proprioception or the feeling you used to have with the teeth in. So that makes up for that 10%.
Do patients really like notice that, the proprioception loss?
Oh yeah, big time. Yeah, they notice that. It's a big learning curve because they're learning how to apply the appropriate force to chew, the motion to chew. It's a big speech issue as well. So a lot of patients are constantly learning where to put their tongue, right? When they're making an S noise or an F noise, because they have had a dentition that's changed rapidly over a 10-year period. And right, they may have started off speaking well, then they started to adapt and learn how to speak without half their teeth. And now they have not only front teeth, but back teeth now, and they just don't know where to put their tongue. So speech issues are, I'd say, pretty common for a little bit. Patients will tell us that they will start their day off speaking really well, but by the end of the day, they're tired and their S's or F's may come out. That's because their muscles are just not paying attention. They get lazy at the end of the day and they start to slur. So I even advise patients to, hey, don't feel shy about going to see a speech pathologist, right? Tell them, hey, like that's like the stuff my wife does. And it's very common issues. So you're not alone.
So if somebody has phonetic issues, is this typically a retraining thing? Or when do somebody look at this and they say, this is a process failure? This is something I've done.
I would definitely establish if they had any phonetic issues from day one. I'm a huge advocate of getting a video of the patient pre-surgically. So I just say a version of like, hey, we're getting a video to see how you kind of talk for, it could be for marketing purposes. It could be to send to the designer so they know where the teeth are and spatially within the face. But then also to register like, hey, you know, these are the things that may occur. And so if there's an underlying speech issue, definitely get that on video or put it in your notes because you're probably going to make it way worse. And then secondarily, it's going to be, well, how thick is the prosthetic? If you did a palatal approach or zygos and you really had to do, you only had specific places to put the implants, well, you need to talk about that with the patient and saying, hey, you're a very difficult case. The implants are going to be in an area where speech could change for a very long period of time, and it's going to feel way different than your natural teeth. And then if you're in a position where, hey, this is a standard all on X or all on four, and you can put the implants in the right place so you can get like a relatively thin prosthetic, then the speech should only theoretically change for a short period of time until the tongue catches up. But I tell patients, it's like, look, you're going to be retrained the muscle. When I had one crown done up here and I point to number two where I have a crown, I was like, dude, I bit my cheek for 2 weeks and that's one tooth. So when we go in there and we give you, you know, another 24 to 28 teeth back in one day, you're going to bite your tongue. You're going to bite your cheek. Your speech is going to change. You're going to have to learn how to chew again. And then if they're not 80 years old, right, I'll say, hey, even my 80-year-old patients can get this. They just get it more slowly. So I have no doubt that you're going to get it. It could just take 6 months to a year. But just make sure you give yourself like the grace and time for these muscles to learn. But all muscles will learn and adapt as long as you practice and you don't give up. So I kind of put it on them. It's like, hey, this is like a workout routine. If you give up, you're not going to talk properly. And then, of course, if my implants are in like a really shitty position and I mess something up, then you might want to consider, yeah, like replace your implants or change your multi-unit to swap it out in a way that gets the prosthetic thinner. Because, yeah, it could be a prosthetic reason why they don't speak properly. It could be, for sure. If done well, it probably isn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good to know. You know, a lot of times, like, I'm curious what you would say to this is that a lot of people are, how do we talk about sinus grafting in a manner that doesn't just scare the hell out of the patient? Because it's a nasty sound. It sounds nasty.
Dude, if someone had to do it to me, I'd be hesitant because I've done a lot of them. So I would just say there's a version of, hey, we might have to do and regrow some bone in the sinus because you have enough width. And I'm using my hands and I'll say width, but you don't have enough height. And so if we were to put an implant into your sinus, the sinus is just filled with air and we get no stability in air. So what we'll do is we'll put some bone graft and we'll regrow bone in the sinus at the same time as placing the implant. And then I look at their reaction and most people are like, okay, you got to explain this better, dude. So I'll say, hey, it's like, it sounds really scary. So I address it. I literally say, it sounds really scary. But just remember, if you go to the orthopedic surgeon and they need to do your hip or your knee, they're going to say 50% of these are going to fail at 10 years. I'm going to say, hey, this sinus graft I'm going to do for you, 97% of those are successful at 10 years. And it's really easy to do. And it's all done in one surgery. And you're barely going to be aware that I've done anything into the sinus because it's so minimalistic. But it sounds really scary. And I know that. Just know I've been doing this for a long time. This is actually the easiest part of the procedure is this one little thing I have to do. But I think logically, it does sound like the scariest thing. And I tell them, logically, you are correct. It sounds super scary, but it's really not for these reasons.
Dr. Dune, I do like the logical comment. Now that I've heard you say that a few times, I've actually integrated that into my own patient presentation. So that way the patient doesn't feel crazy, right? You don't want the patient thinking, wow, I was completely wrong. I'm stupid. I was thinking about this incorrectly. Like, no one deserves to feel that way. So that logical remark is a good one, by the way. I say a pretty similar thing. I threw up a CT. I put the CT up and then on our CT software with the VaTech one, that's why I love the VaTech software so much, is you can just throw an implant on there within like 10 seconds. So you put an implant on there and you show the patient, and I draw a little marker and I show them, this is where your bone is. And then this is where your sinus is. And I put the implant on it and go, there's not enough bone. The sinus is an empty space. We can't place an implant into an empty space because there's no bone there. And they go, yeah, yeah, for sure. And I tell them, good news is with yours, you do need a sinus lift, but I can do it at the same time that your implant is placed. And majority of the time, that's true. Doing a bunch of lateral sinus lifts aren't as common these days, I'd say. Anything with about 3.5 millimeters of bone, that I will do a vertical sinus. So I tell the patient, good news is I can do your sinus lift at the same time as your implant. And they look a little confused, like, what does that mean? And I tell them that first I place the implant, I do the sinus lift through this tiny hole, and it will be, yeah, I just explain how simple of a procedure that one would be, because I can do it through that same little hole, right? And I tell them the procedure will take me about an extra 5 minutes. And they're like, huh, that's crazy. That's not much time. And I joke around and tell them this used to take me an hour, right? But good news for you is I teach this and I'm very good at implants. I know it sounds scary, but it doesn't have any more pain involved as if I was to take out a tooth or take out a wisdom tooth or to just place the implant itself.
Yeah, I would imagine for like you guys both, like being instructors, somebody that teaches this, that's just like a huge rep thing for the patients that they're just like, yeah, this is the guy.
Yep. I think patients, as long as like you build yourself as an authority and the patient doesn't think that you're way more unaffordable, and as long as you're genuine, I think every patient will say yes.
Yeah. And even before we teach and we can play that card and it makes our jobs a little easier in the consultation room, all the verbiage and things that we're talking about right now is stuff we've used and still works just fine.
Yeah, totally. So what would you say the course coming up in June, like what are you most excited about your June course?
Dude, it's going to be freaking epic. So the June and November full arch courses, we don't teach pterygoids, but we're going to be doing pterygoids. We're going to be doing full arch. We're going to be doing sinuses. We're going to be doing block grafts, like with vertebral block grafts. I mean, you name it, we do it. And it's like a really big production. We got like the designers there in ExoCAD, and they're doing all the 3D printing, and we do same or next day deliveries for the prosthetics. We do marketing videos on the reveals for the patients. Some of these patients have been waiting decades for this opportunity. And just like the amount of like joy and human connection and just camaraderie that happens at these courses is really big. And it's a lot of work. I mean, like the physical work of these attendees doing the arches, they put in the work and they do a really, really good job at it. And so then they get to meet a lot of people who are like them. I think one of the things that's important is doing things with people who are like you, with the same aspirations that you have and the same goals you have. So you also kind of pseudo create your community over there. And the big full arch courses are great for that because everyone is there with a common mindset of just massive growth. So it's fun. It's my favorite one.
There are longer days. I think Dude and I are there from like 7 a.m. until like 8 p.m. some of these days. Throughout the whole weekend, we'll probably place like 140 implants, like something just bonkers. Everyone that goes is just like, holy crap. There's so many cool things that I saw. And like how I didn't know that we could do this, right? And I didn't realize that a lot of people do this too. I think everyone's a little bit surprised by how a lot of docs like me and Dune are doing this stuff on a daily basis, and how that we can help them fulfill those aspirations to be doing the same thing in their town, right? That's the fun part. And I'm always surprised by how every course I actually get a little bit less tired. I could work from 7 to 8 and help place 40, 50 implants in that day, and I'm actually not tired at the end of it. I'm still energized. So that's how fun those weekends are for me.
You definitely build in endurance to these things, for sure.
That's why I wondered, is it like riding a bike at some point where you're just like, oh, just slamming, dunking some implants, no big D.
It's like verbatim what I say.
That's awesome, guys. Hey, listeners, check out Colorado Surgical Institute. There is still some seats available. Go check that out and go to the June course. It's going to be a lot of fun. All right, guys. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you next time.
Thanks, Paul.
Awesome. Thanks, Paul.
Hey, everybody. This is Dr. Dune from Colorado Surgical Institute. Just wanted to give you guys a shout out and let you know about the program. We have full arch surgeries. We have lateral sinus lifts. We have block grafting courses, all done in one weekend with the whole digital workflow with photogrammetry units, scanners, 3D printers, milling, you name it, anything regarded to full arch, we cover in depth. We also have a PGCA course. What that is, it's the Postgraduate Clinical Accelerator course, where we are going to be covering wisdom teeth, single implants, and it can be complex single implants with vertical sinus lifts. We'll also be covering full arch extractions with ridge reduction, bone grafting, PRP, suturing, and we also will have a course on socket preservation. So if you guys are interested in any of those courses, please reach out to us at Colorado Surgical Institute. The code is HEAL.
Were you one of the lucky dentists that got a tax surprise this year? Nothing like thinking that you have more money only to get that wiped away by a tax return. Or are you wondering why you are driving blind all year long, not knowing what your expenses are, what they should be, or how they compare to other dentists just like you? Enter Bull Moose Financial, a full-service accounting firm to handle your payroll, bookkeeping, tax compliance, tax returns and filings, as well as tax planning. And by tax planning, I mean knowing what you're going to owe well before the year is even over. I'm Paul Etchison, and I endorse working with Bull Moose. They were my CPA for many years, and if you want a responsive dental-specific CPA that will free you up from the burden of bookkeeping payroll and be attentive to your special needs as a dental practice owner, go to bullmoosefinancial.com. That's Bull, B-U-L-L, moosefinancial.com. Mention the Dental Practice Heroes podcast, and they will waive your $2,000 onboarding fee. So sign yourself up, and rest assured you know your CPA is doing all they can do to help and support your dental practice.